Hi there, how are we all doing? Thanks very much for tuning in to another episode of Booze Beaters. Very appreciative of the listens and those that have subscribed to my pod. My listens, the episode last week, downloaded 26% more than usual, and I've reached countries such as Morocco and Macedonia, which I'll explore later in the pod. I try and keep each episode to a half hour, so the digestible format for a Friday afternoon or over the weekend. But all bets are off on a guest spot, and I think when someone takes the time to come on my show and tell their story, you have to afford them that little bit more time. The Booze Beater Yo has proved extremely popular. I have people clamoring for it, and deservedly goes out this week to two accounts. So for the uninitiated, on Instagram, there's accounts and there's pretty much a sobriety tribe up there, and they're a good crew, and I'm learning more from interacting with them. And the two accounts that I wanted to mention this week, the first one is from the UK. I suspect the north of England, but I'm not sure. I know she's a daughter who lives up in Sheffield. So it's Sober Thoughts, who is there about the 6 month sober mark, and is just I'm into this sort of universe stuff and vibes and things like that, and she's just a cool lady. She's got good chill, and what I like about it is she admittedly had a little bit of a wobble in her sobriety, and we've all had wobbles, and she was quite open about it and reached out to people on the gram and jumped that hurdle, and is all the better and stronger for her sobriety since. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing her get that 1 year, and I have every confidence that she will do it. And I mentioned that study where 120 people 1,200 people that went into a Chicago rehab over 8 years. Of those 1,200, only 400 will get 1 year of sobriety under their belt. So I root for people to get that year, and I'd love to see Sober Thoughts do it. And the second Booze Beater Yo goes out from an Instagram live video I did, and I'd noticed this account beforehand, Sober Phoenix, who is based in Macedonia. And I have to plead my ignorance. I knew FYR Macedonia is a breakup of those Eastern European countries in around Romania and Yugoslavia. Didn't know much more about it. And Sober Phoenix has a year clean and sober, and just got speaking to him, and very engaging guy, and telling me about the challenges that they have in Macedonia. It's a very poor economy, and the employment structures aren't there, as well as that the lifestyles that we take for granted in Western Europe and the US, they don't have the same opportunities that we do. I mentioned before about the number of AA drop-in centres alone in Dublin, which reaches the hundreds, and in Macedonia there isn't one. So he was a really good guy, and I said, look, I'd give him a shout out. His feed as well is very it's very upbeat, it's very engaging, and he's someone who's just trying to create awareness in his home country. And I thought, look, my listenership would benefit from having a look at these accounts. So I'll put the link in the comments section on the gram. This week I have an interview, a sober guest who's kindly decided to come on. So before I put him on the air, I just wanted to say how grateful I am when someone comes on to my show. Sober guest, Sober Sunrise did it about 10 to 12 podcasts ago, and I'm just hugely appreciative that people put that out there and put their story out there and afford me their time to talk about their experiences. I think it enhances this podcast. It definitely increases the listenership. I see it spike. And I was only looking at the trends of the listenership, which you can see on Anchor. And you're beginning to see spikes and trends. January, my listenership was off the charts. February and March, then, as you can imagine, as people's willpower drops off with those New Year's resolutions, the listenership drops off. But it's bounced back, and it's thanks to people like Sober Sunrise and Sober Wolf, who are coming onto the podcast and describing their stories. I think from listening to other pods as well, we all benefit from listening to others' experiences. I've seen it said on the gram, people removing themselves from Instagram because they think it becomes too all consuming to talk about sobriety all the time. And I get that in the early years of sobriety, and look, you know, they can always come back. I sort of like the concept myself that I'm always going to put out my pod every Friday, and I picture it like a gargoyle on Notre Dame. I'm going to be there in the sunshine, I'm going to be there in the pissing rain, I'll be there in the snow. I like the element of it. I like that I've made this commitment to it, and I want to continue it, and I want to try and just explore other avenues, and it's allowed me to do that. So thanks again. As I say, it's a very long thank you to the listenership and to the guests, but I really want to get the point across how grateful I am for people sharing the story and putting it out there. So this week's guest is Sober Wolf. Okay, Sober Wolf, thanks a million for joining us. How are you keeping?
I'm good. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. I thought what we'd do is we'd get a couple of loosener questions, if that's okay, where I'm going to rattle a couple of quick fire questions at you that aren't anything to do with sobriety, to get a feel of just the type of dude you are, if that's okay.
That's totally fine, not a problem.
Brilliant. And this is unscripted for the listeners, so I haven't prepped you on this. I'm just going to, you don't have to explain your answers, just give them, okay?
All right, no worries.
Brilliant. Favorite film?
Con Air.
Favorite food?
Pasta.
Favorite band?
Rage Against the Machine.
Good choice. Any tattoos?
I've got a full sleeve and many more on the other arm.
Did you sit at the front or back of the class?
Back.
First car?
Peugeot 306.
First job?
Making and fitting window blinds.
Favourite character trait in someone?
Humour.
Earliest memory?
That's a tough one.
Okay, keep this one clean. You're stuck in a lift with three people. Name them. So three people of your choice you get stuck in a lift with, and keep it clean.
Bob Marley.
Okay.
Duncan Ferguson.
Excellent choice. Yeah.
I could name.
Okay, we'll go with Duncan and Bob at the moment. Okay, what makes you laugh most?
Sarcasm.
Okay, right. So, as I said, just a loosener and a warmer upper. Just to listeners, Sober Wolf and I connected on the gram and have yapped since then outside of it, so that's probably why it doesn't seem like we're talking on for the first time. Usually yapping football or sport or whatever on WhatsApp. Just for the listeners, I thought probably the best way to start off is if you just wanted to give a background, if okay with yourself, on you know, when you started drinking and sort of right up to when you decided to stop and what your experience was like with it. So the floor over to you.
Yeah, not a problem. I started drinking when I was about 15, 16.
Okay.
Just out in the local area with the mates, you know, like going out drinking when you're not supposed to was the in thing.
Sure.
In the 90s. Yeah, it wasn't so bad then, obviously, because I was just getting into it. I started drinking properly when I was about 18.
Okay.
18 onwards, I started drinking every weekend, binge drinking, really.
Okay, so what type of sessions were they? Were they, like, in pubs, house parties, nightclubs?
Everything.
Everything. Okay, so you went hard.
Yeah, it started off in the pub, you know, meeting with friends and stuff.
Sure.
And then go back to someone's house till the early hours of the morning. Some weekends it'd be in clubs, you know, it was just every weekend. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday kind of thing.
Okay, and with that level of drinking, like, hangovers was the attitude, hair of the dog, go again, or?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
And at that age, you didn't realize the anxiety and the depression that came with it.
Okay. When I had the guest on Sober Sunrise, Aaron, and we discussed that your tolerance and the more tolerance you had, it was almost like a macho thing. Is it a similar experience for you?
Yeah, 100%. That's what it was, really. I think who could drink the most and who was the best idiot of the group. And I think it was like that with all my mates, to be honest. In the 90s, when I was growing up anyway, that's what it was like.
Okay.
It was like you just said, like a macho kind of thing for drinking.
And those friends, have you kept in contact with them?
No, not to be honest, I haven't. I've actually, once I had kids, I moved away to Liverpool when
okay.
I had my kids. So when I returned then a few years later, they'd moved on. I think it's just part of growing up anyway. You just kind of distance yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's you're right with that. Some friendships run their course, and you know, it's I found that, like, if they know you're not going to be going out for pints or you're not going on the sauce, it's, you know, it's no thing. It's just they look for people that are going to do the same thing with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So Liverpool, like, did the trend continue there when you'd moved up there?
When I moved up there, it was more of drinking in the house when the kids were in bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
drinking in the house after work and stuff wasn't too bad, to be honest, when I moved to Liverpool, because obviously I was away from the friends that I was drinking with and stuff, so it wasn't really the same. But I was still, you know, having a few cans, you know, every other night or whatever.
Sure. So you mentioned when you were first talking about the drinking, about anxiety, like, how bad were your hangovers?
Terrible. They'd be, well, to be honest, the older I got, the worse they got.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's to do with age or the amount of drink you are putting away. But, about 6 years ago, I lost my brother, so I think I kind of hit it harder then.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that. Was that, like, do you mind going into how you lost him?
No, it was a drink driver. His friend was driving home from the pub one night, and he was in the back of the car. It was a full car, and he'd been drink driving, and he lost it on the way home. And my brother was the only one that died in the crash, so I kind of lost it after that, really. Suppressing anger and, you know, upset through drink and stuff.
So what age was your What age was your brother, Will?
He was 32 when he died, so he'd have been 38 now.
So he was your older brother?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and you guys had a good relationship? Great relationship?
Yeah, really good. Yeah, he was a Liverpool fan, and I'm an Everton fan, so it was a lot of banter there.
So, on that, you won't begrudge Liverpool if they win the league this year.
I don't begrudge Liverpool, but the supporters, you know, we won't hear the end of it, will we?
We won't. I think I told you the story off air, did I, about my dad who's a Liverpool supporter?
That's it, yeah.
And Liverpool beat Spurs there with a shocking late goal conceded from our viewpoint. And my dad did a John Terry full kit when I called down with the baby who was in the Spurs kit. And he squeezed himself into, which isn't an easy task because my sister... her 06-07 Liverpool Carlsberg jersey, and he squeezed himself into that so he could rub it in my face. But I look, you know, in fairness, when they won the 05 Champions League, I wouldn't have begrudged them that at the time. But again, you said you hit it hard when, you know, with that loss of your brother, that was your way of coping.
Well, yeah, without noticing, I think that's what I turned to suppress the anger and upset. And without noticing, I was just drinking more and more, to be honest. And I'd been hit with a bit of anxiety and depression with the loss of my brother. But then I wasn't making it any better with drink. So, it was it's a downward spiral, isn't it?
Did anyone, like, try and talk to you on it, or recommend counselling or anything like that, or did you get a pass because of like suffering such a tragic event that you know, people who were there would look at his way of coping, he'll come out of it, or what was your experience?
No, I was told by close people around me and family and stuff to go to the doctors, and obviously they put me on some antidepressants and stuff, but as I know now, antidepressants and alcohol don't mix at all. Yeah. So it kind of cancels it out.
I think it's one of those things as well, isn't it? I've mentioned it a couple of pods back, and my dad lost his brother when he was so my dad would have been about 34, and his brother so it was drink related as well, and I'd said it before as well that my granddad was hit by a drunk driver, so I can empathise with you, and I know how frustrating it is. Like, you know, it's just I recall actually, like, people's way of coping, an Irish wake was drink, and I was like looking at it from a young fella's eyes, like I was 11 or 12, and one of the things I recall was my granddad going, that's not going to help anything, when my uncle had died. But what has led to the decision then 7 months ago to completely knock it on the head? Is it just you're out of all the feeds that I see on Instagram, you seem very definitive about, that's it, I'm not drinking again. It's not happening.
Yeah, to be honest, the first couple of weeks to a month was quite difficult because obviously I was used to turning to a drink when I felt like crap, to be honest.
Sure.
It's got easier, I'll admit. I've been reading books and I've been researching it a lot, so I think that's helped in my decision to not turn around and go back to them same ways.
So do you find you've different coping mechanisms, and when you have a tough day or a stressful day or something gets you down, is it you've different escape routes, like, or is it that you're educating yourself about it?
I'm educating as much as I can, but what I've noticed I've done is I've switched the focus, where normally if I was feeling a bit crappy or down or whatever, I'd go for a drink, where I've switched the focus to I'll go for a run or I'll go to the mountains, because I think the mountains is the best therapy you can get. Like getting out in the mountains for me is, you know, it just clears your head and gives you another, like a boost, really.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, and a lot of feeds have that on Instagram, but I've a buddy who's big into it, he's an ultra runner,
Seen him on your page, I think.
Yeah, he's a great guy, Pablo, and he's doing the North Downs Way, the UTMB next year. The North Downs Way is a 100-mile one down in London, and myself and his girlfriend and Gemma are going to do the support for him. So I'll do a couple of live videos from that because I'm looking forward to. We're getting the great part of seeing people, you know, coming into the various stations and sort of cheering them on with it, and you sort of get to live it vicariously through them. But the sights that they see and everything like that. So, are the mountains are on your doorstep where you live in Wales? Are they? You can just.
Yeah. Snowdonia is a half an hour from my doorstep, so it's just up the A55 motorway to Snowdonia, and I'm straight onto them from there.
Okay, so on that then, like, did you join a mountaineering club? Have you, or did you just go up yourself the first couple of times? And
to be honest, I've been doing it since I was a teenager. My dad and my brother were big mountain runners, so they were always in the mountains, so I've grown up with it, to be honest.
Okay, and is it predominantly then hiking that you're doing, or are you doing the trail running there as well?
I'm doing a lot of trail running, but that's coastal paths and stuff near me. But I would like to get into mountain running, but I need to get my fitness up first and lose some weight.
Brilliant. So it's not going to be long falling off you, is it? If you're like that's a serious mountain you're talking about there. Like, it's not a hill. Like, it's
no.
What are we talking in feet?
The ones I do in Snowdonia are around 2,500 feet.
Wow.
You've got Snowden, that's 3,000 feet. So.
Okay, so base to summit. What are you talking? How long?
Depends which mountain it is and what route you take, to be honest. All the routes are different. I have been a couple of the mountains, I think it's about 2 hour up and then an hour down.
Okay, so you're
enough, just taking it easy.
That's fantastic though, like, you can go and experience that and it's on your doorstep, and you know, literally be back home with a cup of tea and biscuit in your hand after.
That's
fantastic. How's the family reacted to your recent sobriety?
To be honest, I have tried it a couple of times and I've failed miserably.
Okay.
But then this time, I think they're still expecting me to grab a drink, to be honest. They keep saying, so you're not going to have just one? And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. There's no point in me just having one. I don't want one.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're expecting me to grab another drink sometime, but I know for a fact I won't do it again.
I can completely empathise with that. I had a couple of failed attempts as well. And it was all about logging time in the failed attempts, and that's what gives me great confidence in what you're saying about, you know, the first couple of weeks initially you were logging time, but after that you're beginning to say, right, it's life o'clock here, what else am I doing? And it just doesn't become a preoccupation.
That's it, yeah. I'll still count the milestones, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
Like yourself, you're doing amazingly, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm coming up on 10 years in November. And it's only since October of last year that I started to really put it out there on the gram, like on social media. But prior to that, I think after about a year, and the first year, and I've said that, people sort of said, he's serious on this, you know. I did some stupid things, I have to say, like going on stags, and stags and non-drinkers just don't mix.
No, there's no point in even attempting it.
there's not. I don't know if I've said it on a pod, but I was at a stags in Aberdeen and I ended up on the Sunday at Mass. Like, I was at Mass to keep warm because the shitty hotel that they booked they didn't have the heating on in it, because like the proprietors are going, well, we don't need heating on in a hotel because they're all sauced up to the gills and they're sweating alcohol out of them. And I was,
they don't feel it.
Yeah, that alcohol blanket is one, where, you know, and
did you get a lot of support with yours?
Do I get which?
Did you get a lot of support when you quit drinking?
No, I have to say, initially, not at all. It's only as I got more and more time under my belt that people became more supportive. But I had things I had my mates who felt like, you know, I'd abandoned them, and it was something on them, and it reflected on them, and things like, no, Damo, like, you weren't really that bad, you weren't that messy, and you know, it's not like you were getting arrested or stuff like that. But I actually, I don't know if you've seen it, and I actually took it down pretty quickly. I posted a picture that one of my cousins put up, of, I'm obviously hungover to bits with her now 16-year-old daughter in my arms as a baby. And I mean, like, I can almost smell the drink off the photograph, you know, that way. And my frame is completely different. Like, I just look like I haven't been looking after myself. I haven't been nourishing myself. And it was a very uncomfortable picture to see. And, but, you know, your crew that you're partying with don't see that. Like, you're in a little bit of a hamster wheel cycle of the house parties, down the booze, or whatever game is on. I know you're big into sport, like Everton. So, like, you know, every week there's a match on. And, like, I remember sometimes, like, it was getting ridiculous. There was games starting at 12 o'clock on Saturday, and you're there for the 12 o'clock kickoff, the 3 o'clock, the 5 o'clock. Then you're watching Spanish football, and, like, you're seeing double, and you're going, you know,
exactly what you're saying, yeah.
Like, I'm just glad that I'm out of that cycle, and I've opened my
life. That was actually one for going out midday. That's what I enjoy doing. Midday was, but that was when I used to go out. Wouldn't go out at 8 o'clock. If I was going out, it'd be midday, 2 or 3 o'clock for kickoff, and it was like that every weekend.
I was the exact same, and it was things like you'd get served easier and quicker at the bar, no queues. And to me, that sort of signaled, when I look back in reflection, it was all about the drink rather than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd say, oh, I'll be home by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. That was never the case. I was still out till the early hours.
Yeah, and then it's easier to go on it the next day.
Yeah.
Especially
if it's
a Sunday. So, you've two young boys.
I have, yeah.
And
yeah,
things must have changed up so much for the better since you made the sobriety decision, have they?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a different person altogether. When I was drinking, I was the mood swings and stuff. You know, sure. People probably know, you know, your depression, anxiety, your moods are terrible after you've been drinking for days, I think. Just feel a lot more clear-headed and a lot more time, and it's great. I love sobriety. Best thing I've done.
I agree. It's up there, definitely top two, you know, top two or three decisions of my life. And I like the element of, I think when you first choose it, there's a little bit like all of a sudden you're going to be living a rock star lifestyle, and you know, you're going to be on a yacht from all the money you're going to save not drinking. It's not like that, but life's a lot easier without the confusion and hassle that alcohol brings, I think.
No, definitely, yeah. 100%.
I get some of the ex-colleagues that I used to work with, they used to rib me about, like, you know, when you're off alcohol, I think the perception out there is people think you're, you know, you're constantly productive. And I used to say to them, I'm one of the laziest people you'll ever meet, because I don't have to deal with, like, going to the bottle bank crap anymore, or going to the off license, or, like, there's a whole swathe of time saving issues, you know, the hours you'd lose to a hangover. Like, it's
an
incredible amount of time. Do you find you've more time?
Definitely, yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I've seen so many changes since I've stopped drinking. It's crazy. I think my skin's improved so much because my skin was terrible, and I've read up about it, researched it. Alcohol, it's really bad for your skin. My skin's better, my mood's better, my sleep's better. You know, the list is endless, the amount of things that have improved.
Working life?
Working life's better, yeah. You concentrate more, you're on the ball more.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think your capacity to concentrate is much better.
100%, yeah.
And then I don't know about yourself, how you find it, but I like the fact that the week isn't building up to this big crescendo. You know, I sort of used to find it like you're craving that drink and almost like the shoulders slumping back the first drink, but then as soon as you have it, it's like a spider's web. And
yeah,
you know, it's just for me, like I could never moderate.
Yeah. I couldn't
know. And I think I'm getting from you, moderation is never going to be any sort of route you're going to go down.
No, definitely not. It's all in or not at all.
Agreed. Have you done anything like AA meetings or anything like that, or you've just?
No, I've stayed away from it. To be honest, when I first stopped, in the first week or two, I bought a book called Kick the Drink Easily.
Okay.
By Jason Vale.
And
that was a game changer for me. That's helped me massively. I still read it now. You know, I've gone back over it in little bits and stuff.
Brilliant.
And if anyone needs any help or is struggling, they should get that book. 100%.
I think it's like that Dr. Seuss quote, isn't it? It's the more you read, the more you'll know, the more places you'll go. And I think you can sort of, you can definitely learn from others' experiences. Those tough sort of life moments where you get blindsided. Have you been to an Everton match since you made the decision?
Do you know what? I've been to one. I went just before Christmas and I took my oldest lad, he's 6, took him to his first game.
Brilliant. Did you just win?
I was sober then, but we had to leave half time because he's 6 and he's not really into football. He got quite tired and restless, so
sure.
I thought I better take him home now. But yeah, that was the first game I'd gone to and I enjoyed it much better without the ale.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think I said as well about concerts and things like that are just so much easier. You get the experience of what you're there as opposed to going to something for the alcohol consumption.
Yeah, I listened to one of your pods early on and you said you went to a concert, didn't you?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was, but you said how good it was sober.
I've been to it, I've been to so many concerts where I just look at it now and I go, it's like I'm looking around and it's not a smugness. I'm just going, everyone else is missing a trick here. The trick to a concert is go without alcohol so you're not queuing at a bar, spilling drink down yourself, getting it knocked over, all the hassle. You can just go sit there and let the band do the work and entertain you, which is what you paid for in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I always find that, you know, where bands, whoever they are, I think, and I'm not hating on them, but rappers in particular, and they're there, throw your hands up and throw your diamonds up and all that. And there, I'm not doing any of that. Jack to that. That's a load of pony. I paid for the ticket. You're here to entertain me. I want you to do all that stuff. So, musical taste, who are you into? Other than Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine, it's one of the best albums I've ever heard, one of theirs. I like rock, really.
Yeah.
Rock, indie rock.
Rage Against the Machine, I remember that coming out, I think it was about 8 or 9, and it was a game changer. I remember a couple of songs like Bullet in the Head and things like that, and it just like absolutely blew my mind. Like, it was so visceral.
The first time I've heard rap and rock together as well.
Yeah, I've actually, and it hasn't been done that much. The only ones I can think of, Linkin Park were a bit like that way, but they got slated for it, because you have your sort of metal purists or rocker purists, you know. Although I do like the rockers, sort of the vibe when you go to a gig with that. Like, there's a lack of skanks or scobes or trouble, you know. It's just,
they did one with Jay-Z as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Very, it's excellent, actually. I really like that stuff. It's all that brush your shoulders off and stuff like that. But actually, it's one of the things, because I think Chester Bedingfield's anniversary is coming up shortly, who's the lead singer, or was the lead singer of Linkin Park. And I think when I was talking to Gemma about doing this pod earlier, I was saying, you're the type of person that I love having on as a guest, because I think the Americans are way ahead of us at talking and putting things out there. And I think it's important to do it as lads, because, you know, lads just, we don't do it. And, you know, things like depression and suicide rates and all that are just so much higher.
Crazy, and I think alcohol is a big factor in it, you know. I think it really is.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that, like, it, someone said to me, I was at a good mate of mine said to me at a night out at the Dogs one night, how long is it since you've had a drink, Damon? I was there, I think it's 4 years, and his reaction was, Jesus, like, you've been stuck with yourself for 4 years. And, you know, it spoke volumes to me, because it's, you know, that's why a lot of people drink. It's numbing and escapism and getting off your head. It's like a reboot. And he's gone,
it's in reality, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think, like, the more you're doing it and the more I read and educate myself about it, you're kicking that can of trouble that you're not dealing with further down the road. And it's getting bigger every time. And then it's going to come back in some way, shape or form. So don't get me wrong, I get difficult moments the same as anyone, but I just have different coping mechanisms with them now. I'll put it out there. I've tried mad shit. I've tried meditation. I don't know. Have you ever tried that?
I do it now. I still do it. I think it's brilliant. Just before going to sleep, I do it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I like it. I like it a lot. I remember I was doing it in a church in a very rough part of Dublin. And I was the youngest there by about 20 years. And it was a priest who was doing the meditation class, who's since left the priesthood and married a woman. And I thought, fair play to him. But he was like a character out of Father Ted. I don't know if you've seen Father Ted. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
And so I used to go down on a Wednesday, and you were doing this hour, and like everything, I got started getting competitive with it. So I was like, how long can I meditate for now? Can I get 40 minutes? Can I get 45 minutes? And this priest was like sort of talking you through the meditation. It was pretty cool, but then the hook came in with, oh, if you just push this little bit further now, you're going to get God. And I was like, oh shit, you've ruined it. Why couldn't you just leave me meditating? Why did he have to throw the old God stuff into it? Which is like, Damo, you're in a church with a priest doing meditation. God was going to come into it at some stage. But I do. Have you read any books on meditation?
Do you know what? I haven't. I looked up the internet for my, you know, what the stuff I've been doing. I wouldn't say I'm big into it, but I've just learned with the breathing techniques and stuff, and following your breath and your stomach and chest or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm doing it the proper way, but it seems to be working what I am doing.
So it's effective for you?
Yeah, it quietens the mind at night, really. At night, my head works the most, you see.
Okay.
When you're just before you're going to sleep, to be honest. That's when mine starts working. So I start the breathing techniques then. I normally fall asleep while I'm doing it, so it's not too bad.
So sleep-wise, has that improved for you then since alcohol? You've given it up?
Yeah, it's definitely improved. I still wake, you know, toss and turn. I think that's normal, though. But yeah, you don't really sleep properly when you've been drinking, do you?
No, I think it's medically proven that, you know, while the liver is still working, you don't get that deep REM style sleep. So, you know, you might get 12 hours, but it's not as effective as someone who doesn't have alcohol in their system and gets 3 hours deep sleep.
Yeah.
And then it's got a knock on effect. You know yourself, if you don't feel fresh, and you don't feel you probably indulge more. Everything's a knock on effect in that way.
Yeah.
You've had a busy week with the lads.
I have, yeah. I picked them up on Monday, and I'm taking them back tomorrow. Taking them back to Liverpool. So yeah, it's been busy. I applaud the single mothers that have kids. I really do. They can be hard work at times.
But they've it's all worthwhile. It's all pay.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I love having them.
And the distance that you're travelling from Wales up to Liverpool, then?
It's about 1 hour and 45, depending on traffic.
Okay, so you're doing that a couple of times a week, are you?
I'll do it twice a month, depending on work and school. Okay. You know, with their school leave, because I work shifts, so sometimes I work weekends, so I won't see them. But it's usually twice a month I'll see them. I'll have them in Wales, yeah.
And have they noticed any difference since your sobriety, or they just see it as dad the same, like they wouldn't have seen your level of drinking, or?
I don't think they would have noticed the level of drinking I was at. They were too young to know anything. So I think I stopped just in time for that side of things.
That's great. It's a nice legacy. I remember seeing a quote by is it Skinner, you know Skinner and Baddiel? Is it Frank Skinner?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So he's dry now, I think about 8 to 10 years, and he made a decision when he became a parent, and he said that it was just one of the best things he ever did, because it just it made him a better dad. So I'd concur with that from my point of view. What do you think? Do you think it's going to enhance that relationship?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah, because I remember when I was drinking quite a bit, if I had the boys down, but they were a lot younger then, though. I wouldn't be as stressed out. I'm not as stressed out now, you know, when they play up and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
When I was drinking, I was more agitated and more stressed. It rise up a lot quicker when I was drinking, because obviously that's what it does to you. It changes your mood, doesn't it? You know, not that I was drinking, but. Yeah. It was like a day after or whatever.
I agree. You're irritable anyway.
What's the word?
And it takes less to set you off. Whereas now, like, you're probably there still doing the breathing techniques. I know I'm doing them once or twice. And there I am. So there's three girls in our house. So 13, 11 and 7. And
teenagers.
Yeah, but like some of their phrases, I mean, just are side splittingly funny. And like, I'll give you one example. So Hayley used to say to me, "Yeah, not today." And I was there, I'd go, "Yeah, I know what that means." And she's there, "What's it mean then?" And I'm there, "That means not today, Satan. So you're calling me Satan." And it's like, "No, it doesn't mean that." And I'm there, "I do. I know exactly what it means." And then, but I find now I'm actually going, "Yeah, not today." And they're sort of going, they're so much quicker, well, than I would have been at that age. Like, I get, there's a one word that they use with a shutdown, which is rude. So they just say the word back to you, rude. And you go, I know what that is. That's not a shutdown. You're not getting away with that with saying rude. But like, to be fair, I like the sort of the banter and the back and forth. Like, you get great fun out of it. To be fair, like the crack and the fun and the good days, like 100% far outweigh the bad days. So I'm getting from you, you've the same feeling. Have you planned any summer holiday with them or anything like that?
I'm going to, have you heard of a place called Haven? Do you have them in Ireland?
No, I haven't.
It's like a caravan park, it is.
Brilliant.
So, it's a big caravan park with swimming pool on site and like a fairground and stuff. Yeah, it's really good. I'm going there in next month with them for about 3 or 4 days.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So something to look forward to, something on the horizon.
That's it, definitely. Can't wait. Have you got anything?
At the moment, London, because we're going to go across for a couple of days to do this support. And then Gemma has family over there who are from London at the... So her sister is married to a Portuguese or Londoner, who's a Chelsea fan. And their son is called Pablo, who's 5, who I had down on the green playing football with the rest of the kids yesterday. And it was very funny. The kids were playing Irish football. I don't know if you've ever seen that, where it's almost like Aussie rules. And they were picking it up.
Gaelic,
yeah. So they all play, all the girls, for like local Gaelic clubs. And I was trying to play soccer with them, and they were picking it up. And he was just losing his mind, going, I'm ball. But he's got that real diamond geezer type London accent. And the kids were just falling around laughing at him because he was losing it. But he's going to be a good little footballer, to be fair. He's hardy, you know, he gets stuck in. So we're over there. I love London. Being a Spurs fan, I will hopefully try and get to the stadium. I've other than that, especially with the baby, he's 8 weeks. I think that's the longest I'm gonna risk it with a flight with him.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I wanna be fair to him and things like that. Have to ask you before we wrap it up. So I know you said some milestones you're gonna celebrate more than others. You know, you're not in this continual counting, day counting things, but what are you going to do for a year to treat yourself? Like, is it going to be a hike or something like epic on the horizon in that respect?
I actually have been thinking about this, and I am thinking about a tattoo maybe.
Brilliant. So
because I've heard you mention it on your earlier pod about, you know, getting a sobriety tattoo, and I think maybe on the year one I might just get a date, maybe when I stop drinking or something that'll remind me. Obviously I might even get the Sober Wolf logo.
Yeah, I'm a little envious of your username. I gotta say it, I really am. We were gonna call my son is called Dashiell. And most people are there, Dashiell. And myself and Gemma actually laugh, go, that's actually the more moderate of the names we were thinking of, because we were thinking of Axel, tribute to Axel Guns N' Roses, and my surname is Fowley, so lads call me Axel anyway. And the other one then, and we were a long time thinking about it, we were going to call him Wolf, and we just thought, I remember saying it one day, you know what, if we're in a restaurant and you just shout across Wolf, like, it's, you know, it's not really going to, like, I don't want the child feeling that he's a freak show the whole time. But Sober Wolf is a class name. What made you go with Wolf?
Do you know what came into my mind? A lone wolf. And that's how you feel when you're sober. You're a lone wolf. You're the only one that's sober around, you know, people that you know and stuff.
Yep.
And then I thought, Sober Wolf sounds good.
Maybe you could do something with boat, where you've got the wolf and the date incorporated.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I can tell you're definitely in the ink life as well, aren't you? Like, it's one of those. Like, how long is it since you've been in the chair?
The longest I've been in.
How long is it since you've had the last tattoo? Like,
February, I got it done last.
Okay.
I've started another sleeve, I have, so. I think February was the last one I got done, yeah.
And do you go to the same artist all the time, or?
To be honest, it's been a bit of North Wales, Liverpool, North Wales, Liverpool, because I've been going back and forth a lot over the years, so I think I've mixed it up a bit, which wasn't a good idea with the sleeve I've got. It means something to me because it's all like a story.
Sure.
But
yeah.
For anyone else, they'd be like, oh, that's a bit, you know, sketchy. But to me, it means something, so I'm not asked what anyone else thinks.
I'm the exact same. I've got some tattoos that draw a breath. Like, I think I said it before, if I said to myself 10 years ago, yeah, I'm going to have a stormtrooper, I have a dragon, I have a street lamp at one stage, I have Roman numerals, and it continues and it goes, and I know it's going to, the next one that I'm planning out is, again, it's probably off the wall as well, but I like that, they mean them to me, I don't get them for other people.
That's it.
And I think there's a little bit of that out there where other people get them for other people. And they've never really been in the life anyway, but tattoos are just sort of, they're the new cool trend, aren't they?
Oh, definitely, yeah, they have been for years now, but I think it's getting a lot more popular, isn't it?
Big time. I think it's...
workplaces now as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are more acceptable. Hayley, who I spoke about, who's 13, her ambition is to be a tattoo artist now. And we took her to the Dublin Tattoo Convention in August, and the people in that life, like, they were so receptive to her that, you know, she was 13, she was interested, and they were talking about her and telling her to build her portfolio and all that, and you couldn't have wished for a better introduction. But she's made that way. She's sort of creative, you know.
Yeah, that's it. She likes her art anyway, does she?
She does, big into it, sort of, it is definitely, like, you know, she's definitely built that way, in that you'd be walking down the road and next thing she's looking at right angles of stuff or whatever, and the head is up in the clouds. But I gotta say, it's sort of like that about her, you know. I wish I had that trait myself. I don't have it. I appreciate it, and I like getting it on my skin, but I don't have the talent in that respect. What's the hope for the two lads in relation to, you know, them growing up and getting out into the world? Like, would you like them to stay in Wales, or, you know, have you thought about stuff like that?
I love Liverpool. I really love Liverpool as a city, but I don't think it's a good place for kids to grow up. A lot of people probably disagree, but that's just my opinion. As an adult, it's a good place, but I think growing up, I'm not really keen on the fact of them growing up in Liverpool, but that's not my choice, so sure. I can't obviously decide that one. But yeah, Wales is good, you know, it's great, but they might feel bored here, you know, there's not much on Anglesey's, it hasn't got much opportunities job-wise.
Okay.
So, yeah, difficult one, to be honest. If they're in Liverpool, they've got a lot more, you know, prospects there to get jobs and stuff.
Sure.
But then you've got the crime levels terrible there.
Is it? It's as bad as ever with the drugs and...
gang-related shootings and stuff. There's a lot of it going on, to be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between Dublin and Liverpool. Like, it's only a spitting distance across the Irish Sea. I think I said it to you before. So my aunt was a nun in Liverpool. I don't know if you know the area, Waterloo.
I think I've heard of it. Yeah.
So it's I remember I was 15 or 16, and I was across in Liverpool, and that she was in a convent there, and they used to treat the Liverpool players before the clubs got as sophisticated as they were, because the nuns seen it as a vocation and it was very hygienic. So all the players went there for the rehab. And I was getting all these Liverpool autographs, and if anything, it just got shoved down my neck too much. So I sort of kicked back against it. But as well as that, I noticed when I was in Liverpool that all the people from Liverpool were actually Everton fans. They weren't Liverpool fans. I don't know if that's your experience.
Yeah. What, you mean the fan base?
Yeah, the fan base of Everton is predominantly Liverpool, whereas like they come from all over to support Liverpool, the club.
Yeah, there's a lot of Everton fan base on Anglesey and North Wales, to be honest. But yeah, there is a lot more Everton fans in Liverpool, I think.
And rugby, is that a passion of yours?
No, not at all.
Serious?
No. I don't mind rugby union, you know, Wales, but I'll watch Wales rugby union, but that's as far as I'll go. I won't bother with Super League or anything like that.
And you mentioned earlier the running. Will you do road running at all or anything like that?
I've never been into road running. My dad and my brother were big trail runners and mountain runners, and they guided me onto trails, to be honest. And every time I seem to run on the road, I seem to pick up an injury of shin splints or
sure
hamstrings or whatever. But I know you're a big road runner, aren't you?
Yeah, I do enjoy it, and the legs have held up to it. So I got 6 miles in earlier after, or before you see me up on the Instagram live, and I'm doing the Dublin Marathon later this year. I'm hoping to do the London Marathon next year. But I just I like running. I like just going out there and sort of it's a reboot. It's a shuffle of the deck, and you know, if ever you get sort of stressful scenarios, you had a tough day with work or anything like that, or just I think it's similar to yourself. I just like being active as well, and my job doesn't always encourage that. So I think, you know, because you have to pay the bills or whatever else. Actually, that was a question I was going to ask you. So now that, you know, you're older and wiser or whatever like that, your ideal job you could do or wanted to do?
If I could start again, I'd try and be a police officer.
Okay. And would you consider it now?
My dad was a police officer for 30 years, and he always said that I should have gone into it. But when I was younger and drinking and stuff, it never appealed to me. But if I was starting again now, I'd definitely try it. I'd definitely try and get into it.
That's a very interesting one. Age doesn't preclude you from it, does it? To be a police officer?
No. I'm in a good job at the moment, so yeah, I wouldn't write it off, but yeah, could look into it again possibly.
It's an interesting one. Well, anything else you want to get across on the pod before we wrap it up?
No, nothing really. I think we've covered quite a lot.
I do indeed. So we leave it there if it's okay. And look, thanks a million for coming on. Really, really appreciate
it.
Delighted to have you on it, and we might revisit it in a year's time or whatever, and I'm sure things will have changed up entirely for the both of us, if you'd be interested in doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Sounds good. I'll wrap it up. So